It's to the best of our knowledge. I'm Anne Strainchamps. Ever feel overwhelmed by digital technology? Like you can never, ever, no matter what you do, keep up with that endless torrent of email and Facebook posts? Well, you're not alone. Media theorist Douglas Rushkoff says this technology has changed our relationship to time, and we're all having trouble adapting to it. He spoke with Steve Paulson.
Doug, the title of your book, Present Shock, is a reference to Alvin Toffler's 1970 book, Future Shock. What's the difference between future shock and present shock?
Well, I guess in some sense, maybe the sensation might be similar. The real difference is that the future that Alvin Toffler was describing that we were moving towards is here with us now. So while Toffler was really warning us really to learn how to orient to a world that was changing ever more rapidly, to basically be able to adjust to change itself. I'm arguing that that change has happened, that if anything, you know, as we passed from the 90s into the 21st century, we became less of a society that was just obsessed with the future and what's next and what's happening, what's the next big thing, where is it all going? And we became a society that was very much in the moment, in a kind of an always-on, real-time, hyper-connected moment. So our focus really becomes less about how do we adjust to change to something much more like how do we adjust to living in a world where everything is happening seemingly at the same time.
Well, you break this idea of presentism down into five big areas, and let's talk about those. One you call digiphrenia. What is this?
Well, digiphrenia is interesting, and it kind of comes out of that video game sensibility. I mean, the beauty of video games is that instead of watching some other character go through a story, you're the one going through the story. You know, you're the one making the choices in real time, and you move from choice to choice to choice to choice rather than watching these canned choices. It's the sense of agency. But, you know, the digital environment very often makes it seem like you don't even have to choose. You don't have to choose between this and that. You can choose both. And we're doing so many things online where we're choosing both that we've ended up with really multiple instances, multiple incarnations of ourselves, kind of running simultaneously on all these different platforms. And it's very hard to live with more than one you. You know, digital technology is great for copying things, but human beings don't copy so well. So there's you on Twitter that maybe somebody's commenting on something that you did. There's you in your inbox that's filling up with messages that are waiting for responses. There's you on Facebook who might be being used to advertise a product you never even heard of while you're asleep, you know, and you'll wake up that you've been in these sponsored stories. You know, so how do you deal with all of these different yous running simultaneously? That's sort of the essence of this digiphrenia or this kind of digital confusion.
So you're saying that it's enough to make you a little crazy. There's almost like a split personality here because we're tending to so many different digital personae.
Right. And even if your personality is not split, your digital personalities are split and your single personality is going to have to deal with all of them. I got the idea for the digiphrenia chapter when I was in the lobby of a hotel in Berlin. I kept trying to log into my Google Calendar to see if I could do one talk at the same time as another talk, whether I'd be able to get from one to the other in time. And each place I went, I couldn't log in until I finally got Wi-Fi and I'm in this lobby. And I get this message back from Google that they locked me out of my calendar because they said I was trying to log in from too many places at once, right? So Google Calendar didn't believe I was a human being. They didn't believe one human could be in all those places at once. And that, to me, seemed to be the essence of, you know, the problem we have with digital culture. It's not this idea of information overload, and all these people have all these problems with digital technology. And this, I promise you, Present Shock is not one of these books. It's just whining and hand-wringing about the problems of digitality. But what I do get concerned about is our readiness to put our human lives into digital time frames. You know, digital technologies really don't understand time. They live outside time. They're just sequences. You know, your Twitter feed is not in real time. It's just trying to catch up with you. Just because people are sending emails out to you, it doesn't mean that now you have to respond in real time to them, right? The beauty of digital technology was that it waited. You know, the early conversations we used to have on the bulletin boards, we were all so smart because we had all the time in the world to respond to these things.
Now, another aspect of this presentism that we've been talking about is what you call overwinding. What do you mean by overwinding?
Yeah, it's funny. I got the idea for overwinding when I was rereading Stuart Brand's great book, The Clock of the Long Now, in order to write this one. What he argues in there is that we need to think in these great sort of 10,000-year time spans. And I was trying to do that, you know, and I had this plastic water bottle. I was about to get on a plane. I didn't see a recycle bin. There was just a trash can there. And I'm like, do I just throw it out? You know, is it going to be 10,000 years? And I realized it wasn't feeling like a long now to me. It was feeling more like a short forever. And that's where I got the idea of overwinding, where in a presentist society and an always-on sort of micro-moment managed society, it's very tempting to try to compress these really long timescales into really short periods of time. So you'll see examples of that, say, you know, on the stock market, where people don't buy in order to invest in the future of a company, they buy in order to make money on the trade, right? So people buy Facebook in the morning and they're mad 5 minutes later that it hasn't gone up and they go sell it. And people who aren't satisfied with that, you know, they end up buying derivatives on stocks, which are really just a way to buy the future stock now.
Well, it raises questions, fascinating questions about what we mean by real time.
Mm-hmm.
There was a traditional sense of real time of, you know, it was kind of what we would do with our physical body, you know, not dealing with any kind of digital technologies. And yet real time has taken on an entirely different meaning now.
Oh, it has. Real time means this sort of always on Twitter feed. Oh, that's real time. And of course, that's not real time. That's 5 minutes ago, 10 minutes ago, 10 seconds ago. It's still not you in real time. The Greeks actually understood this. They had two different words for time. You know, there's the typical one, chronos, which means time of the clock, like it's 4:01. And they had this other word, kairos, which meant timing. And timing was more about your readiness or the appropriateness. Timing was what only humans could really understand. It's like, you know, I crashed the car at 4:01, but what's the best time to tell Dad that I crashed the car? You know, is that 5:01? No, it's timing. You know, that's after he's had his drink and before he's opened the bills, right? It's much more subtle. And that more and more time you spend aware of timing and being ready, the more you begin to connect with all of these cycles that, you know, you could call them new age, but they're actually real. I mean, when you ask me how I work according to the moon.
Wait, so how do you do this? You work according to the lunar cycle?
Yeah, believe it or not. So this is edge science, if you will. So it's the kind of thing that, you know, you do a little experimentation on yourself and just see what works and what doesn't. What I found out was that over a 28-day lunar cycle, there's sort of four main weeks. 28 days is 4 7-day weeks. And in each week, a different neurotransmitter seems to dominate our brain chemistry. The first week is acetylcholine, the second week is serotonin, third week is dopamine, and the last week is norepinephrine. So if you know that, you go, oh my gosh, it's not just me, but everybody's on acetylcholine this week. That means they're going to have good energy, right? They're going to be peppy. It's going to be great for introducing them to new ideas. Serotonin week, everybody's going to have a lot of energy to work. You know, everybody's going to be very productive. So that's when I do my writing. I don't even worry about it the next week. Dopamine week, you're not going to get anything done dopamine week. That's when you're going to go skiing and party and go nuts, right? And the final week, norepinephrine, that's the fight or flight neurotransmitter. So that's putting everybody in a very sort of analytic, structural, sort of Barack Obama mindset. You know, that's where to organize my calendar. That's when to organize the chapters of my book. So when I did that, I stopped thinking of dopamine week, which did turn out to come up every month, as writer's block. That's not what it is. It's something else. This is the time when I'm going to enjoy people and have my parties and do my crazy stuff. You know, and then when I looked at it that way, you know, and I just did it by my efficiency in terms of words, my word count went up about 40%.
Really?
Yeah, when I worked really according to these sort of underlying biological clocks. And this stuff, which we look at as folklore now, you got to remember, we looked at jet lag as folklore and old wives' tales until it was Major League Baseball managers started to realize their pitchers did way better when they traveled from the East Coast to the West than when they traveled from the West Coast to the East. And it didn't make sense until they really came to understand how biological clocks work, our relationship to our melatonin in the sun. And there's all of these other cycles. That's what keeps people alive and in time.
Douglas Rushkoff is a media theorist and the author of Present Shock, When Everything Happens Now.